You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store and text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here on a good-looking Tuesday morning. Got some great things taking place this weekend, aside from the, this is going to be 2 weeks away, but the Vikings are coming to town this week. Then on October 4th and 5th, the Vikings will be honored in an entirely different way at UW Green Bay. Isn't that correct, Heidi Sherman?
That is.
Hi, Heidi. Heidi, what a great event.
Thank you.
And this is an annual event? Tell us about this.
Yeah, we started doing it.
A little closer to the mic and then everybody can hear you. All right, thanks.
How's this?
Perfect.
Yeah, we actually got a replica of a Viking house in 2017 at UW Green Bay. And we had been programming around it, but then after the pandemic, we began hosting the Midwest Viking Festival about 4 years.
And we have quite a connection to the whole Vikings, right, from this neck of the woods?
Well, we do have a large immigrant Scandinavian population.
Boy, do we.
Yeah, we do.
You had 3,000 people participate in this?
Visiting. Yeah.
Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that shows that there's obviously interest in this. So tell us about the event. I know, like Johnny said, it's October 4th and 5th from 10 to 4. What can people expect?
What we try to do is, we try not to reinforce stereotypes about Vikings. So there are no horned helmets. This is not a booze battle and babes festival. This is a this is a festival for families.
Where's that one?
I don't know. Okay. She said it. We didn't.
Let's get them on.
Yeah, they exist.
Okay.
But not at UWGB. So what we try to do is it's an educational festival. And we have about 50 to 60 historical interpreters or quote unquote Vikings. And these are people who have studied what it was like to live 1,000 years ago. And so they've learned different crafts, like how to make wooden bowls on a pole lathe that's cranked. That's pretty impressive. So two people doing that. But we also have people demonstrating textiles, different kinds of smithing, so silversmithing, blacksmithing, weaving. But we also have battle demonstrations and performances. We have, Kari Turing from Minnesota comes and she does presentations that are very entertaining on runes and music in the Viking Age and Viking storytelling. And we have published authors who come and talk about their books.
So where did you come up with, and this is really interesting, especially when you, that lathe thing makes me tired just hearing about it, right? It's two people turning and another guy trying to make the bowl. Where did you come up with all this? Or tell me about the origin of getting this here in Green Bay.
Well, there have been festivals that have been, looking at the Viking Age all across the upper Midwest for about 15 years. It's become really popular with shows like Vikings on the History Channel and, Lord of the Rings, which of course doesn't deal with Vikings, but it's medieval-esque, right? Mm-hmm. People are really into that. And they just began to hold these festivals in North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa. And we got really lucky because one of the best ones was in Fargo-Moorhead. And I had been collaborating with that group. They had a grant, a big grant. And so every year they'd have this incredible festival.
Up in Fargo.
Yeah, up in Fargo.
Okay.
Exactly. And then they decided to go into a different direction coming out of the pandemic. And we had just gotten the Viking House on campus. And so we have a really great little spot for a festival.
What's the Viking House? You keep mentioning it. I don't know what that is.
The Wood Hall. Talk about the Viking House.
There is a couple of reenactors, a physicist and a geneticist by day.
Okay.
And they had been studying what it was like to live in the Viking Age 1,000 years ago. So they decided that they were going to build their own replica of a Viking house, similar to what it would have looked like in Norway.
Okay.
1,000 years ago. So they built it on their land And I heard
on GB at GB.
No, on their land.
I thought this was at GB. Okay, go ahead.
We moved it to GB.
Got it.
But originally it was in central Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it was just incredible. So I friended with them, and I brought classes of students for Viking camps. And when they decided to move, they offered it to us. So I raised a bunch of money, and we moved it to UWGB.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
So people, you can walk in the house, see it. It's something like a Heritage Hill type thing.
Yeah, it is. It's really like the craftsmanship's pretty incredible.
I bet.
Okay, so we're talking a little bit about, Jim and I were talking about this. Talk about Scandinavia. So Vikings were Danish, Swedish. What else were they generally?
Icelandic. Norway. And there were Vikings actually all over, because they had like ships and they were raiding and trading all over Northern Europe and down into Greece, you know, and the Byzantine Empire in the early Middle Ages.
But this Midwest Viking Festival, it's educational. You got food, everything about it, how it was, what they did 1,000 years ago.
Right.
Is our stereotype wrong?
I would say that, there was a lot of violence in the Viking Age, right? But, there was all over Northern Europe, well, Europe in general.
Tell me they had horns on their helmet.
No.
Why has that been their symbol?
It isn't the real people's symbol. It was adopted in the 19th century by Wagner for, you know, operas
and stuff.
I got to go to this thing.
Make me feel really good. You know what it's going to be? Mm-hmm. That guy who I can't stomach at the Vikings games with a...
Oh, yeah. He's got
the
horns.
Tell me that he doesn't really look like a Viking.
No.
He's got... But did they have those horns, though?
Fraud!
No.
Those big, long... That thing must be what?
Love this.
15
no,
feet?
You just made my day.
The Minnesota Vikings are wrong.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, in so many ways.
Yes.
In so many ways.
We're going to teach him a couple lessons.
What do they look like
this Sunday?
Tell me they're like these skinny little fat guys who are like greasy and something.
I got a picture with that guy.
In the early Middle Ages, the Vikings were actually quite clean. The Anglo-Saxons in England talked about how the Vikings were stealing all their women because they used combs.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
No, it's true. It's true.
So, if anybody up there is Icelandic, same as Greenland or Iceland, I always get those two mixed up. You know,
the Vikings were ice.
The Vikings moved to Iceland.
Do you ever watch the show on Netflix, Vikings?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that's kind of real?
Yeah, but they didn't. I mean,
that show, they had really cool houses, though. The lodges.
Yeah,
were really cool.
That it's approximate. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
but they didn't wear quite so much eye makeup.
Okay. Well, you got to look good for the cameras. Now, let me ask this, though. Do you think there's any, anybody ever found archaeologically anything about Vikings coming to this area? Because that's been gone back and forth over the years.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. But there are people who do. So, people are allowed to believe what they want to. But
how far do you think they went to Newfoundland?
Yes, they did.
And that was it?
Yeah, there's evidence for that.
Because do you watch Curse of Oak Island?
I've heard about that.
Because they're finding something there. It's an island off of Newfoundland where they think they're finding some Viking stuff there.
I don't know.
I think I found some stuff in the UP one time. What?
It's still on eBay. So this event that we're going to go learn... I think we're going to learn more the truth of the Vikings. Critical of what we think we know.
Yeah. I mean, what you learn is how people lived 1,000 years ago. So it's like daily life stuff, right? How they cooked, because we'll be demonstrating how to cook food.
You know what's ironic?
Yeah.
When we go off the grid, we're going to be living like a Viking.
Yeah.
I won't ask. All right. What did they do?
I know what you're going to ask.
No, I'm just going to ask.
What did they do for relaxation?
Did they drink?
You're going to ask if they grew marijuana.
I was going to say, what did they do? I was going to say, it wouldn't have been that direct, but what do they do for medicinal things? What kind of things did the Vikings do?
That's Todd, do I know him?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let our guest answer.
Okay. You know, actually, they would have lived off the land. So, well, they made mead. They told stories. They had took care of their family.
Did they make beer out of mead?
No.
Beer made out of mead?
It's out of barley.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought mead was a beer thing.
Mead's made out of honey.
Ah. So it's almost like I would consider it more like a wine almost than like a beer or something like that.
A honey vice.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they
didn't know that.
Drank their wine. Did they smoke anything? I'm just curious. She's the expert.
Well, she said they lived off the land, so it's probably true, right?
I don't know.
I think they seem too violent for that. You know what I mean?
No, that would chill them all too much.
Yeah,
you're probably right.
Hey guys, we gotta go pillage this one village later.
Let's do it tomorrow.
Dude, I don't want it today, man. Come on.
All right, we're gonna go and learn a lot. Midwest Viking Festival.
English women. Oh,
is there a cost to this?
No, it's absolutely free.
Really?
Yeah, we fundraise so that we can make it accessible and free to everybody. And there's a lot of things for kids. So there's a Viking quest for kids, and there's a lot of learning going on. So we have but there's also things for adults too. So
that'd be cool for these kids to see these potters and these glass bead makers and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, 1,000 years ago, that's a long time ago. And to see it, you know, brought to life.
Do you have any memorabilia, like an axe, an actual axe from the Vikings?
I don't. I respect the archaeology and the museums that need to keep those things. So,
I was just saying, because I've got one. Oh. It could be a Viking thing. I'll show it to you. I'm serious. You got to see this, what a guy gave me. It's this handmade axe, and it was hand-forged, you can tell, with just like a branch for a thing.
Yeah.
It could be a Viking axe.
Interesting.
So you discounted the
I'll
guy
bring it
that,
there that day.
When we come out of the tunnel, he's standing right next to it at the Viking games.
Yeah, fraud.
But it says in here, if you blow through.
Fraud.
Well, what is this? At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if you blow through a tube anywhere in the world, you get the same interval of three tones. Did they have that? That instrument we're talking about or not? Close.
They did use things like cow horns to, you know, signal.
All right.
For battle, but yeah, they did.
But it wasn't that donk thing that the guy has on.
No,
okay.
I don't.
That's just all show. I'm not clear on the horns. You say they didn't have those? If you think of the Vikings, don't you think of those horns away?
Yeah.
I mean, like, they didn't, huh?
No. No, they didn't. Well, sorry, okay. Disappoint.
No, that's...
We had horns on our helmets, and we were the Norsemen, so okay.
Johnny plays for that.
I guess there's two sides to this story.
There is.
Honey Sherman, thank you so much.
This is going to be fun.
Midwest Viking Fest coming up at UW Green Bay, October 4th and 5th from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And it is free, and there's about a billion different things you can do there.
And do you have a website? Because you got the whole agenda on here. I think it's awesome.
It's on the UWGB website.
Okay.
So Midwest Viking Festival, UWGB.
All right, great.
Perfect.
Thank you for coming
so
in.
Much.
That's great.
Got Carl Winter, NBC26, joining us right now.
W.
Hey, welcome back! Mino and the Mayor. Tuesday, September 24th, my favorite week of the year. Remember I told you that's my favorite week of the year.
You did.
Favorite week of the year. Voter registration day. Excuse me, Carl, did you register to vote?
I did register to vote,
good.
Yes.
Today is also punctuation day. Carl, are you good at punctuation?
I would consider myself pretty good at punctuation.
How about being punctual?
How about that one, Carl?
That is not. Carl was supposed to be here 22 minutes
Carl.
Ago. So
you German, Carl? Are you German?
I am German.
Because that's Carl with the K.
That's right. I'm doing my people a disservice by being late, but here I am.
Yeah, you guys are supposed to be punctual. Us Italians were the ones that were always late. But that's Carl with a K. Are you going over to Oktoberfest?
I am. I was thinking Appleton Oktoberfest on Saturday, but this looks great too. I should check that out and check out the BMWs that I'm sure they have there and the Volkswagens.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
You got a good little German accent.
Do you like?
You could play a German in like a World War II movie. Don't you think?
He could be.
Yeah,
that,
their life.
He
could,
no, you got that look.
You could be the kid in Sound of Music.
Oh, God, for geez.
Right? I mean,
we can't through. We've been doing this show. Let me see how many months. June, July, August, September. 15 months. There hasn't been 1 week that's gone by, and Todd can verify this. Todd, in 15 months of doing this show, have we had a week go by where the words Sound of Music have not been uttered?
Oh, no. No. In fact, I think it's in his contract that we have that to do that.
Yeah. So I said he would look good. He would be playing part of a German soldier in World War II movie. And Jim, you'd be the kid in Sound of Music.
Although he does look like the kid in Sound of
the
Music.
The Nazi guy? He looks like the Nazi guy.
Yeah.
The
guy? Yeah. He does.
Dave, you've heard that.
I have not heard it, but I have been to Salzburg, so I guess if I got into character, I could probably
do
it.
Do
I think you could. You could play that guy.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Who would I be?
What was the guy? Hans, the guy, the greedy guy. That's like, I love money. I love people with money. You know,
that would be you.
That would totally be you. That you just described yourself right now. You just described yourself today.
Max.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Uncle Max.
That'll work.
All right.
Okay. Anyway, hey, what are you working on? You're always working. What's new in?
Lots going
exciting on. In 26.
Yeah, well, I mean, last week I did some more reporting on Packers picking up properties. That was more of an update for folks. They're up to 6 this year. Friday, I also worked on a story about people's water tasting bad. So that was an interesting one. I did taste the water, and apparently the seasonal changes in Lake Michigan are causing people's water to taste weird.
Thank you.
Wait. Okay. Our water comes from two sources here in Greater Green Bay.
You would know. Yeah.
I do know. Yeah, and what municipality had water not tasting good?
This was Bellevue and De Pere mostly, so not here in downtown Green Bay.
Okay. It's the Manitowoc water.
Correct. Yes. And then they get it from the lake. Right. So, yeah, the Central Brown County water. Yeah, right. They say, you know, the lake's warmer than usual. The organic content's different. And they acknowledge, like, there is that earthy taste.
Right.
I did taste it down there.
Right.
So that was an interesting story.
And then ours, it's filtered and just taste like right
off
the shelf.
I thought ours tasted a little weird last week because, you know, I drink water out of the tap. I'm a tap guy.
That's fine.
But I put it in my used bottles,
There's your taste.
Well, maybe it was.
Yeah, maybe.
And I left
just
it
maybe.
Open.
Yep.
And you know what?
That doesn't sound good.
No, you know what I think it was?
I had soap in there.
So, I reuse bottles. I don't know if you're supposed to reuse plastic bottles.
There's a number on there. There's certain.
How many times?
No, not a number of certain times. There's certain plastic that you shouldn't use again, and which is the majority of it. But there is some that you could reuse.
But anyway,
you probably buy the cheap. If you buy it at the dollar store, I'm sure you can't reuse it. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. So I made a big thing of tuna salad the other night. Okay?
Okay, this isn't.
And I left it in my fridge for about 4 days, and I left that bottle of water without a cap on.
Well, that's why.
In the fridge.
In the fridge.
Did the tuna salad have something on the top?
No.
Covered
I
up?
Bet it didn't.
No.
So
that's what happened.
It went into the water, and you're blaming the municipal water?
Well, I'm not blaming. Jeez. I noticed it's, and so when you said that, I thought, well, that must be.
That Manitowoc tastes like that without the tuna.
Maybe I get my water from Manitowoc. I don't know.
Y'all have to live in Oshkosh and drink Oshkosh water, and then you won't say anything about what your water tastes like.
Really?
Well, it tastes just like Lake Winnebago, of course.
No,
right. Have you been out to Carl?
But in your water study, did you go out to the treatment plant in Sugar Bush?
I did not, but I talked to the Central Brown County Water and several other water folks, and they're like, yeah, it tastes earthy and musty. Like, we acknowledge that, but it's still safe. It's still testing fine. So that was interesting.
Yes, that would be a true statement.
Well, you're from LA, right?
Not from Northern California, but I went to school in LA.
But once you get your water from the Colorado River?
Yeah, it's not great.
That's what I was going to say.
But if the water wasn't safe, they'd.
Right.
And that's Flint. I mean, not Flint.
Yeah, Flint.
It was Flint. That was Flint.
That was Flint.
Anyway, the water is safe. It just doesn't taste great. But anyway, so the water thing was a big deal. Hey, the Packers continue to, and I know you've been kind of the lead guy on that.
I was going
to
ask that story, though. Are these things advertised for sale, or are the Packers just going to the places and saying, hey, exactly?
Well, there's the people who put it up for sale. It's. I mean, you see the pricing.
The ones close to the stadium, I think they know that the Packers are going to be the highest bidder in a lot of cases.
Okay.
But the one that I reported on last week actually happened back in April, but it was Packer Fastener, the big hex nut on Ashland.
Sure.
They sold to the Packers. So whether that bid it out, I'm not sure. But the Packers paid well above market value for their facility, but they're just using that for the pro shop, distribution for the pro shop.
Oh, so that seems like a long ways away
from
there.
It is, but they also own that place down on Ashland, too.
They are another one on Ashland, right. So
just distribution. And that little pro shop does a lot of volume. Right. It's incredible what they do online. And so you need that inventory because they're not going to put a warehouse connected to Lambeau Field.
But what are they going to do with the other properties? You know, the Tony Cannondale Drive area properties that are still available. Yeah, what would they be doing there?
Or the Stadium Drive areas. There are a lot of rumors out there that are unsubstantiated from the Packers end, but a lot of rumors about whether they want to move practice fields or add practice fields. I think that's kind of our leading theory at this point. Again, not substantiated by the Packers.
That rumor's been going around for a while, because I was still in real estate, and a guy had his house for sale by owner, and it was just south of the field and everything. And he wanted, you know, like $400,000 for a $160,000 house type of thing.
Yep.
And he says, well, the word is Packers can move all their practice facilities over here. And that was probably 2.5 years ago.
That practice facility is a big, big investment. You look at Dallas, right? They're up in Frisco. But it's amazing what they did up there for practice facilities. And they really built, there's a whole city built around that practice facility, soccer. And so, yeah, I mean, these guys think long term. They're not going anywhere. I mean, and they have the right. It's going to be interesting to see what here's your song. This guy, it looks just
what
like
is
him. This is Sound of Music. This is him.
He was a Nazi,
not gonna hit
though.
That note.
He was a Nazi.
Hit that note.
No, they get together.
Well, then they break up, don't they? Or no?
He's going.
All right. We got to start a quick break.
That is so funny.
Carl Winter, NBC 26.
Man, this dude looks just like him. Better
beware. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store. And text the studio directly, all from the Civic app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here. We've had some great guests today. Daryl Burnett talked about the Automobile Gallery, a huge Oktoberfest. Oktoberfest.
Right.
Take place this weekend. A lot of German food, all those kinds of things.
And German cars.
We've got Carl here with us right now. Carl Winter. Sprechen Sie Deutsch, Carl?
That's right.
Ein bisschen Deutsch.
Yeah,
nicht sehr gut, aber ein bisschen, ja.
Yeah. All right.
Carl.
Scheiße.
Yes. So, Carl, you're...
I just swore on the air.
You did.
In German. Todd.
$10,000.
The FCC's on the phone.
I just swore on the air.
Yeah. Okay.
Think about that. But, Carl, you're fascinating. First of all, we always talk about how people are cooler than us, except when Nikki comes into the studio.
She's
what?
Cooler
oh, I'm
than
sorry.
Us. Everybody is.
Oh,
everybody
man.
Is. Ooh. We've not. Ouch. Well, maybe. I shouldn't say that. Okay.
So anyway, but we heard great reviews on her last night, her and Todd with Pete Schwab.
Oh, good.
It was a lot of fun.
Wow. But anyway, how about this guy? So we always say people are cooler than
us. Oh, this guy's amazing.
Okay. Did either one of our grandparents fight against the Americans in World War II?
I thought, okay, you can go and talk about it. I think the other thing is even cooler, but go ahead.
I know, but his grandfather
I know,
fought for Germany,
yeah,
which is
generally not something I speak of proudly,
but it's
an interesting family history, certainly.
So in my books, I've written 4 books, and I think I've had 3 or 4 people that were on the German side that I interviewed. That is so fascinating to get that perspective.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating. This one guy who became a minister, then when he moved to the United States, lived in Milwaukee area, and if he didn't join... The young German, the Jugard, they'd call it, or whatever, J-U-T.
Right.
Yeah, yep, Jugard. You know, the youth, Nazi youth. His dad had a government job. He'd lose his job. Just boom. He'd lose his job. Another one, her dad was a tailor, and he used to come and make all the German uniforms. And he was old, but it's like, we need you to work for us. And they just took him and made him go do that. And this other one they interviewed, he and his buddies, they were all great high school friends. And one of the things they did is they kept those guys together through their youth camps for the whole thing. And he came down with like a weird disease, like diphtheria or something. Okay. And he's in the hospital. And his buddies all got sent to Russia on the Eastern Front. Okay. And he received every few days, he would receive, because he'd write to all those guys. He's in bed. And every few days he'd get a letter back, sacrificed his love for the fatherland. They all got killed. They all got killed. And so, you know what I mean? So it's like hearing it from their perspective is really fascinating.
Yeah.
No, so, no, but your grandpa didn't talk about it too much, huh?
Not a lot. He was born in 1919 and drafted when he was 18 in 1937.
Okay.
And then they moved to the States in the 50s and he became a civic engineer here in the States. But he doesn't like to talk about his time in the States.
No, I know, but it is fascinating hearing it.
Right.
civic engineer. We just talk about just German ingenuity, you know, because of this car show. But they really are. Hey, Todd, this is a question. I don't know if you were listening earlier when we were talking to Carl. Carl ran track at Pepperdine, right?
All right.
And he went to school out there in Northern California, but he went down to...
Pepperdine is just like maybe the most beautiful campus in America.
Totally. I mean, it is.
In America.
Hard to beat.
It's hard to beat. Hard I mean, beat. That, there's probably something in Hawaii that's just as nice. But
no, I've seen the schools in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, I'll take... I mean, I've been to Pepperdine. I'll take that over anyone.
Out there. We don't have the humidity either, so we'll take it.
Phenomenal.
Anyway, he ran cross country and track. What do you think... was his best time in the mile?
Well, I have no clue.
About. Like, right, people, when we were in school,
give
we ran
it. Give me some choices.
If you broke five minutes, you're really good.
Oh, my God. 6 minute miles, what we most of us ran, right? Didn't you have to run that to get the presidential certificate?
I was 7.5 minutes, I think.
I think I was worse than that, Mino.
Yeah. No, seriously, I think I was about 7.5 minutes.
Yeah. All right. So I think this is, like, really interesting. I'd like to turn this into a contest, but it's too late because I've already started talking about it. This kid... ran, take a guess, right? You ran the mile in 7 minutes, right? You had classmates that ran it in six. You watched the Olympics.
And then got beat up after gym class.
Right, right. For not, the girls beat you. Yeah, and that always hurt a little bit. 3:59.
Shut up.
Sub 4
3:59.
That's unbelievable.
And that was like a world's record forever to beat that, and somebody beat it, and then a bunch of you guys beat
it.
Okay,
here's the thing.
Absolutely incredible.
You didn't believe John when he said he got a 23.
No.
Or a 32, still whatever it was, 23. But you believe the 3-something?
3:59. It's documented. It's well documented. Yeah, there's a video of it.
You're going to believe the German over the Italian.
Oh, yes.
Wow. I think that's incredible.
That's a pretty cool thing at your age to have under your belt.
Yeah, you know? No one can ever take that away from me. Right. It took me a couple of times. Like I ran 4:02 a couple of times before that.
Does that come up in your interview? Do you drop that?
I would throw it in.
I would, but
I don't know if it's on my resume or in my interview, but it's just like... Yeah, no, it's a feather in my cap for sure.
Because I would be like, as soon as I'm done with the interview, I'm going to go run a mile. So it's only going to take me 4 minutes.
I'll be back in four minutes.
Wow, that's incredible. But like Jim brought up, Roger Bannister was the first one to do it. Not sure about what year, late 40s, early 50s?
It was in the 50s. I want to say 56 and nobody, or something like that. Yep.
Nobody had ever done it.
Right.
Thousands, if not millions of people had tried to do it.
Right.
He does it. And then after that.
Dan Brooks.
Yeah.
Just everybody does.
So it was a psychological thing, wasn't it?
There he is right there.
And now
is that you?
That's him.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's the Pepperdine days. Yes. I broke 4 when I was at Syracuse, my 5th year.
Okay.
But
that's a Syracuse uniform though, isn't it?
That's the Pepperdine as well.
Oh, is it? They're both
orange and blue schools.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. That's cool. 4 minutes. Did you, in your mind, did you know you were doing it? Did you know, were they calling out your splits or anything? Where it's like,
yeah, I was running pretty consistently, like, you know, 60 seconds per 400. So I was right on it, but I was on the edge to where I didn't know until
okay.
I crossed.
When I did the 440, quarter mile, my dream was to get to 60 seconds. He did 4 of them back to back to back under 60 seconds.
Did you, like, that's pretty cool. I think you're the first person I ever met in person that has done that.
Me too.
Did you look at becoming a sponsor for shoes?
Anything?
Well, I guess that's one track, I guess, is the whole Olympics. But no, I was wondering if you...
Of course, Jim would turn towards the financial advantages.
No, I had a few ideas.
I would turn towards the being for your country, and you turn to, how do I make a buck out of this?
The guy looks the part.
Am I wrong, Todd?
I think you could sell
totally
some shoes.
Totally what Jim does.
I'm just curious, as you ended up in the media, but did that opportunity present itself?
Yeah, interesting points on that. I thought about running like semi-professionally, but it's hard. In track, I mean, there's just not a lot of money to go around. So like the top end that you hear
about.
Well,
money shouldn't really matter. It should just be more for the love of the...
Oh, here we go. Yeah, that's such a lie. Boy, you'd get some NIL money now, though, wouldn't you?
Right.
Yeah,
now
you would. For sure.
Go ahead. But here in this area, like, you know, I do like the local shoe store, Runaway Shoes. Like I run for them in their jersey when I run road races and they give me a discount. So that's kind of like a small scale of what you can do. But like, I thought about running semi-professionally, but yeah, it's hard to have a living. A lot of pro or semi-pro quote unquote runners have full-time jobs outside of it because they just can't support themselves off of, you know, a small shoe contract.
Okay.
I could tell you something yesterday when I was walking on the trail, I hear us talking behind me. Okay. And it's like pretty far behind me. It's okay. Well, they're pretty far behind. Next thing I know, passing on the left, it's this lady talking on the phone, talking loud. and still blowing past me walking on the trail.
That hurts.
Ask me if that did, it like legitimately hurts. Like, oh my God, am I sad?
It's getting louder and louder.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So I teach a class. I want to talk about this to them. But so the option of, it was really more financial sponsorship. Wasn't a big thing. Wasn't as lucrative as you would have hoped. What about the Olympics?
Well, the interesting element to bringing the two parts of our conversation together there is I could compete legally for either the USA or Germany.
That's
because
right.
I'm a dual citizen.
Yep.
So I could choose one or the other, but then it's really hard to switch back. But yeah, no, it's just really difficult to qualify. I mean, like if I really dedicated myself to it, I think I'm talented enough that I could make the Olympic trials in the United States or maybe the German trials. But I don't think that. I just don't think I'm good enough to ever make it. And I had other ambitions in life, so here I am. You know,
what would it take to qualify for the Olympics these days?
Let's take the mile. 3:59 is what I run. I think you'd probably have to be 3:50 or faster to go.
Wow!
The three guys that made it this year for the United States have all run under 3:50 in the mile.
I had no idea.
Me either.
Because you don't really hear about the mile too much anymore.
Right, and they run the 50. So the 1500 equivalent of that is like sub 3:30 in the 1500. But yeah, the American record was broken last year. A guy ran 3:43 in the mile, which is also the world record, but it was a little bit off the world
record. That's mind-boggling.
It's insane. Yeah.
That's awesome.
People are getting faster and faster.
Yeah, they
high schoolers can break 4 minutes now. Only about 10 have done it, but the high schoolers can break 4 minutes in the mile now, which is absurd.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's wild.
That's incredible.
That's cool. I mean, that's when you. I will think of that every time I see you now. It's just, you know, you get people, and I think that.
I remember
that's a nice badge to have, though, instead of, that guy did time.
I remember in Happy Days, and Richie was like going for a job interview and says, tell me some of your, you know, accomplishments. And he broke 5 minutes in the mile. He was the captain of the track team. He broke 5 minutes in the mile.
And we go back to Happy Days.
That was on Happy Days. Right. I still remember that.
Sometimes they'd interview question, what are you 10 at? You know, and you could, that would be a very quick answer for you.
Yeah, that's what I was best at. I'm not quite in that shape anymore. I don't know what I would run for a mile right now, but not that.
Right.
So you don't look much different from that picture. What did you weigh in that picture?
Probably 160. I'm pretty tall. So for a runner, I was on the big side. Like you look at me on the starting line compared to all these other guys. I probably got 30 pounds on a lot of them. But yeah, that's about what I raced at.
Wow. Okay.
So you're with 26. Your neighborhood, Johnny and I, when you left last time, we're like, he's not going to be here too long.
We didn't mean that in a bad way.
No,
like, oh, he's gonna get canned.
No. You could go on to places, but
you got the luck. You got the whole thing.
Right.
You got
but you
what
like
they
it
look
here.
For.
I do. Yeah. No. I'm excited for the rest of this. You know, high school football and Packers and the draft and the election. I've covered a lot of election stuff, so that's been probably the most interesting element is being in a. You know, I lived in California and New York, right? So being in Wisconsin during an election year has been very, very interesting.
Are
so,
you doing our DePere West DePere game this weekend?
I am, yes,
did,
sir.
Did you see Noah Friday night when he got
I
just
did,
mobbed by
yes.
those kids?
It was electric with the Kakana and Fondi. So
that was
fun. That was fun. Hopefully I get to do something like that. Well, last year I did West DePere in Bayport. I mean,
oh,
remember the
rain.
Weather was horrible.
It was the coldest rain I've ever experienced in my lifetime.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was horrible that night.
That's why we like that it's on TV on 26.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like while I'm up in the box and these poor guys
pizza.
Are out on the sideline
getting
pummeled. Are you okay? Let me ask this though with the Packers season. Now, is this your first Packers season here?
No, I was here all of last season.
Oh, you were here all
of
last season.
And I went to, I think, one game as a fan and then a couple of others I was working. So,
okay. If somebody from California came up here for a Packer game, never been up here before, what would you do for them for that weekend?
Ooh, well, we definitely tailgate. You know, we'd hit a couple bars before the game too, more than likely. But no, I think it's just the college football atmosphere that kind of is here. We don't really have in California as much.
Did Pepperdine have a football team?
We did not.
I didn't think so.
I have siblings that go to USC, so I got to do a little bit there. But even I've been to a game at the Rose Bowl, but it's just not the same in California. I mean, the college football is just not big there, and. I mean, here we're talking about the Packers, but the Packers have the most college football-esque atmosphere in the NFL, I would say. So, no, I think the whole pre- and post-game experience is just as much of an experience as the game itself.
That's cool. That'd be fun to bring somebody that's never been here before.
Right. Hopefully I will. Yeah, no, yeah. At some point this year. And hopefully I'll have people visit me for the draft.
Okay, I
got
to be
honest
here, though. Something that still amazes me a little bit, because I've been to Pepperdine. I've been to Syracuse. I would so take Pepperdine over Syracuse. It's incredible. Of course, I was in Syracuse in the middle of January or whatever, you know, for a basketball game. But why Syracuse?
The Newhouse School of Public Communications is the short answer.
Oh, academics. I didn't
but
even think of that.
No, also the running team. I mean, I had finished my degree at Syracuse or at Pepperdine, and I wanted a school that had both an elite running program and an elite journalism program for my fifth year. I had extra eligibility because of COVID.
Okay.
And Syracuse was the middle of that Venn diagram.
Okay.
It was great at both. And I thought about going there for undergrad because it was so good. So yes, it was a very different weather, different people, but you know, I got to experience something a lot different. So I just, there was no grad degree that I really wanted at Pepperdine.
It is one of the best journalism schools.
It is.
That and Missouri usually are considered the two best.
Yep. Northwestern's great too. Northwestern, but more for print, TV. Yeah. It's, Syracuse is very considers cool. themselves the best.
We got more Northwestern people here than I think you think. Right? Jarts? A lot of those guys a few of them that have been here, which, as I said to him, you hide that well.
but Northwestern, actually Arizona State,
right?
Where I went now, is considered one of the top ones.
Okay. Yep.
But it's funny, Arizona State has gotten so big that Aisha from Channel 2, right. who went to Arizona State, mm-hmm. never set foot on campus. She was like the downtown campus type. You know what I mean? Those places are getting so big.
Tempe versus Phoenix.
I wonder if it loses some of its hands-on sort of thing.
60-something thousand students. Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't know if I would like the not really having that campus atmosphere. So I'm glad. I don't regret going to Pepperdine. Like, we had a great small journalism program.
I will say one thing, though, about ASU for football. They don't play almost all their games at night because it was so hot.
Right.
So you got a party atmosphere all day long with the opposing. So that's
true.
That part wasn't so bad.
I'm sure that's why they do it.
That's it. All right. We got to set our quick break. We'll be back with more. Carl Winter. Is it pronounced Carl or what would it be pronounced in German?
Karl.
Karl.
Karl Winter.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Love it.
We're going to do this in the next segment, him doing a German accent. Brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. How do you say welcome to your guests? Say it with a new entry door from Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Say it with color. The possibilities are endless thanks to Pella's custom colors. Say it with class. Pella's premium doors stand out due to their distinguished craftsmanship. Say it with a great deal. Zero interest up to 60 months. No money down in equal payments. Hurry, offer ends the 31st. Certain restrictions apply. Visit PellaWI.com today.
We love Pella. They're a great sponsor. Great quality product. Of course, you rent. When you get a house, you go to Pella.
And you settle down here in Green Bay.
Yeah. These are the things I'll need to consider, yeah.
Hey, let me ask this, though. But, you know, again, we talk about NBC26. We think they do a really nice job of letting you people get acclimated to one area. I think that's really, really cool. And I think it's really advantageous then in finding contacts. How have you found that aspect of it?
I think it's been great, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably more valuable to some of the folks you've talked to out in Manitowoc and Fond du Lac and Oshkosh and, you know, the far reaches of our viewing area. I think they are local celebrities in those areas.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm more, you know, southern suburbs of Green Bay. So it's not like the local media is still right there as
right,
well.
Right.
So I'm still kind of trying to break into, you know, folks that have, you know, other reporters who have been here for 15, 20 years probably have better contacts than I do.
Sure.
But I've gotten the chance to, you know, to meet a lot of folks and the community leaders, the movers and shakers in these areas. I think that I've certainly gotten my foot in the door over the, you know, year.
I got to ask you a question. Yeah. What type of reporters did you really have a lot of respect for? And which ones did you like, waste my time?
You know, I what you were just alluding to, it, people who were honest, you'd say, look, this is off the record. They put their pen down or pencil, or they would just, they were good to their word. Other times when they would call and say, hey, look, I want to come and talk to you about this. And then they would talk about something else. I didn't like that. And I would tell them
they'd
that,
use something else to get their foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, okay. I've seen that.
You guys used to do that a lot.
Yeah, and you got to shoot people straight. Yeah, yeah. And tell them what the story's about as well. I don't like, you know, you don't like deceiving people on that front.
Yeah. You got a job to do and we respect that. I got a job to do and I got along with most of the reporters and I really respected that. I think sometimes that doesn't happen as much, but you know, they would just say, go out and find two stories. And they'd come and say, what's going on? And there really wasn't anything going on. It's like, come on, give me something. It's like, oh, my mom's going to turn 80. There's like nothing to talk about. And there really wasn't. And they think you're hiding something. You're really not. I mean, government, you know, we didn't, I think we worked pretty hard. But, you know, there's some times where it was a little bit of a lull. And you got to respect that. But I like the reporters. And I think you guys were pretty fair. Yeah, but like I said, you've got a job to do. What I think is interesting about reporters, and you hear this, like, when I like to watch a lot of the shows on Sundays, and boy, they just, without naming their source, they're all like, well, my sources tell me this. So they all spend years developing sources. Well, you have that in sports too a little bit, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's going to take you some time, right? I mean,
I think some people have abused that over the years, though. Mm-hmm. There's no question about in certain reporting, like even with the Packers and everything.
But I think
it got to a point of being too easy to say a source, an anonymous source. That got to be too easy.
Well, I think it's more common in sports even. People try. I saw yesterday with somebody saying Gonzaga was going to go to the Pac-12, and then others were saying, no, my sources are telling me no on this. And I've learned, we don't grant anonymity to people unless they really need it. And
right.
The way I learned, and I haven't really... There are very few stories where people, like, if person is in harm's way, maybe, then you let them be anonymous. But otherwise, like, you lose credibility. If all of my stories, I just said, a source told me this, people would be like, all right, well, he's probably making this up.
And there were some people in Green Bay that I'm not going to name any names or anything like that, where it was kind of like, really? Really? Somebody said that to him? Really? It was that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I think once you earn the respect and trust, then people are going to be like, all right, this guy gets it right, so he's not going to make it up. But if you abuse that anonymous source thing, then it's...
There was a guy that he did a big Packer website thing, and people were swearing that it would be like, send me any of your questions. That it would be like, really? Somebody asked that question about, because he used to work for a different team. You know what I mean? It's you're lying. And somebody would, like, call him out on that on a regular basis. You could just tell Joe Blow didn't just send you this question that you have the perfect answer for.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what I mean by some of that stuff can be, used as a shield.
And to be a reporter or to be an entertainer, that's blurred a little bit now.
Yeah. Thankfully, I don't think necessarily in the local media. Like,
I was talking more national.
Yes, national sports media, certainly.
Well, I don't know, though. Drew was like a superstar at that Preble High School game that night.
True. They love Andrew over there.
They do.
So that's good. But yeah,
Noah's become Showdown. A celebrity in Kakana.
There you go. Yeah. No, I mean, Showdown, we can have a lot of fun. But, in the everyday era, like, we're not entertained. I guess, morning shows are a little bit different. You can have a little more fun. Cameron, meteorologist, he can have some fun. But those of us in the news, like, we kind of keep ourselves in line a little bit.
I think that's what's cool about you guys being involved with Showdown. You can be just your normal self and have fun. It's a fun event. There's nothing serious about high school football that you can't have fun with.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially different world. This week will be fun. West Appear and DePere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. All right.
So you're working on some things, Packer things. Anything else we can that you can tease us with that's down the road? I know you're big on the draft.
Well, the draft will be great. More, but I think the main thing I'm thinking of this week is that I'm working on a story about the history of DePere and West DePere, which is actually very interesting. It's friendly now. It was not friendly in like the 1930s and
40s. Oh, it still isn't. Nicky,
we did that East West game. John and I were both at that, and those are cool rivalries, and that is such a little town yet. Over the bridge, east west. So yeah, it's interesting.
Nikki was here. Nikki works for us, and Jesse is also our new guy. And she's like, "Where?" And she's a big West DePere person. She's like, "Where do you live, DePere? Well, which side?" I don't know.
You gotta know
which side.
Jeez,
so the first question.
So you say in the old days, West DePere. No, it was DePere.
Fighting.
He's doing a story on
contentious.
The thing. It's still alive, and her name is Nikki. It's still alive. Right, Nikki?
They actually just got homecoming back in East DePere, a couple years ago. Because they were so bad.
Because West DePere kids used to come over and cause problems.
Don't blame the West DePere.
Did you know that? They had to cancel homecoming. Yeah, you're going to find out. Great having you here. Carl Winter, NBC 26. Who do you call him? Who's the guy from?
Rolf.
Rolf.
Rolf, man.
Thanks for being here.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.